travelers, and welcome to the Way of the Showman, where we view the world through the lens of showmanship. I am Captain Frodo, and I will be your gracious guide and host along this leg of the journey. Now, since we have delved into different formats, I thought we could do one more episode where we would change up the feeling of the podcast. The Way, and the book that I've written, The Way of the Showman, which we are going through every time the episode says The Way and a number behind it. All those adds up like one long audio book. But in between, it's nice to have these small side trips. And I thought I'd go a little bit more poetic today. And in the first season, we spoke a little bit about mythopoetics, of creating myths. And in fact, this whole Way of the Showman thing came into being because I had started to write fiction, as I have mentioned before, about the Showman's Guild and how fictitious that is. We can get to at another time, because of course it is perhaps more real than reality itself. And this is to give an attempt to show a different way of imagining. It's a kind of a reimagining of the carnival, because the carnival serves as a magnet for anyone that feels like they don't belong. The ones that don't fit into the everyday boredom can, in the world of the fairground, find a place where being different is an asset and not a flaw. But you also get the runaways, the thrill seekers, the junkies, the losers, the insane, the drunks, the gamblers, and your odd middle-class rebel looking for a Saturday night violation of their father's rules. A flirtation with the dark side, perhaps. And wandering down the midway under the bunting flags and the festoon lights with their blaring colours, amongst shadowy twisted signs, banners, and the architecture of amusement, colours, angles, and flashing lights, bright enough to blind the townies into seeing stars where there are only facades of fun. The juxtapositioning of dirty men in pinstriped suits and Bible-bashing preachers shouting the word of the Lord to a wheezy sound of a Salvation Army band on the one end of the midway, whilst at the heart of the fun, at the heart of the midway, girls are walking around in pasties and a G-string on a little platform in front of a crowd of guys wearing trucker caps, moustaches and dirty shirts, while a man in a straw hat is promising them a little something that they can't get at home. All this is interspersed with the smell of sawdust and wild animals, roars of lions right there on the outskirts of town, and it is all such a fleeting meeting with the outlandish and the unconventional. The carnival is like a church, creating a different space where different rules apply. Like the church creates a sacred space for holy worship, the carnival creates a profane space, a profound space where, like the Mexican Day of the Dead, the world turns upside down and what was clandestine and dirty can become flaunted and celebrated. And the carnival appears like a tornado out of nowhere, a calm and quiet tornado, and one morning before the sun is over the horizon, convoy of trucks comes roaring slowly up the dusty highway and settles in on the green just outside the town. And after waving their mums goodbye, kids run straight through the old school building and out the back doors to the carnival. And there they're promised free tickets and put to work. And the carnival grounds are filled with big, muscly guys, the kind that their parents have nightmares about, swinging sledgehammers and pounding metal stakes into the ground whilst the kids sweat in the morning sun, carrying the heavy, oversized pegs. And slowly, a midway appears and a collection of everything exciting, sleazy, exotic and beautiful rises around them as kids violate every child labor law ever written. And when the evening comes, exhausted kids stagger home after their first meeting with hard labor, holding two or three free ride tickets in their dirty, sweaty hands, ripped t-shirts with axle grease from sitting down with the men drinking lemonade in the shade, laughing and coughing on cigarettes whilst feeling strange sensations still just out of reach of conscious understanding, as an older boy takes out a deck of cards with naked ladies on the back, and proud, hard-working boys are bonding with men and older boys, and back home, Mum is waiting, not knowing that the boy she dropped off this morning is coming home a man. When night time comes and the strings of yellow carnival lights flickers on as the sun's rays becomes weaker, most of the kids are too hard. They've been worked too hard and they're too tired to actually go to the carnival to use those hard-earned tickets. Yeah, nothing makes a man out of you like the Carnival of Dreams. The Murder of Mystery. The Joseph Rockstacker Illuminated Circus, Carnival and Menagerie have come to anchor for the coming week's festivities, and I was sent to see the sights. The spot chosen, as all my readers have probably already observed, is the sports field by the swimming hall, and never have I seen it looking so splendid. The grand big top, the Ferris wheel, and the old steam carousel, they were all there. I wandered the midway and took it all in, and a fine sight it was. I have chosen to use this culture column not to review its main attraction, the Grand Circus, but rather I want to convey what I experienced in a most singular and curious side attraction. I was drawn to the anomalous little tent because it seemed to promise a different, almost anachronistic kind of magic. The beautifully ornate wood carvings of the show front, it depicted strange symbolic images of magicians. Their style was different from the other banners and circus pictures in that they seemed to hold some deeper significance outside of my understanding, yet strangely tantalizing. And to me, it had the air of times past when magicians were not just tawdry additions to children parties or entertainment on cruise ships or shopping malls. My interest was piqued, so I paid my dollar to enter and found inside the same style of ornate decoration. The canvas walls were covered with painted symbolic depictions. One that caught my attention had a man climbing a freestanding ladder, and he was almost at the top and held a key outstretched in his hand. Perched atop the wobbly structure, his key pointed towards an eye with a keyhole as a pupil. The atmospheric imagery was indeed most esoteric and made me think more of a secret initiatory fraternity rather than a venue for light-hearted sideshow amusement. The little stage had deep red velvet curtains with the letters B.I.S. embroidered on them, and they opened, and with very little bravado, an unassuming but fiery showman with a big moustache came out. He smiled, seeming genuinely pleased that so many had chosen to join him in the afternoon spectacle, and he began an oration about himself and his origin as an assistant in his father's magic show, and then proceeded to perform a series of funny and baffling routines. I found him a very amicable showman, and I could not help but think that I would very much like to count this chap amongst my friends. And more than being fascinated with this particular trick or any of his particular tricks, I was captivated by the sense of genuine warmth and deep, enthused passion that radiated from this curious prestidigitator. There was no shadow of doubt that this man loved what he did, and for that matter, so did we. The crowd was all very much engaged, and they were laughing and carrying on, and in one routine, particularly amusing, the showman slipped an oversized dice into a small cabinet with four doors and promptly claimed it vanished, although it seemed obvious to us that it had merely slid to the other side and that it was sliding back and forth, with a clever conjurer always opening the wrong door to demonstrate the dice's absence. The comedy of errors and his witty banter made frivolity rise to a quite ecstatic height. The children and more boisterous of us cried out, half-choked with laughter at their misunderstandings, trying to get the showman to open this or that door. And in the end, when he finally opened all four doors of his dice cabinet, it became apparent that he had indeed made the dice disappear, and all the misunderstandings and the fun that ensued was merely part of this man's terrific showmanship. With many jubilant members of the audience wiping tears of joy from their cheeks, the lights dimmed. And in the stark light that arose as the spotlight framed him on the stage, dust rose from the dirty showground through the beam of light. And it was in this moment that the showman proclaimed with a different voice, much more visceral, and he said, "It is time." And he held up a dead twig and a piece of red paper, and in one swift motion he scrunched up the paper and stuck it on the end of the twig. And then he stepped towards some of the men in the front row who were drinking beers, and with a slight nod he picked and pulled one of the green labels off one of the bottles and repeated to do it with another one, and the men looked mystified by this strange behaviour, as was yours truly, or standing at the back watching, taking it all in. And the showman then stuck them onto the twig. Now there's a red lump at the top and there's some green labels on the tumbas, and with this crude imitation of a red flower, then he there was some smattering of good-hearted applause, but it also raised a few eyebrows and wonder of where this was going. And the showman continued with this same oddly serious tone, "What power in us can transform what we see every day into something beautiful?" he said, and of course no one answered this rhetorical question, and he continued to answer it for us. "Love," he said, "love transforms the ordinary into the extraordinary. Love lets us see the wonderful within the wonderful, lets us realize the beauty of what we thought ordinary, and lets us discover the mystery of life wherever we turn." Very, very highfalutin, I must say, and surprising. And with that, the showman snapped his fingers. And here I must admit, I don't know if the transformation happened just then, or if it was just then that I noticed it, but the paper, beer label, and stick had indeed turned into the most lush and perfectly formed rose. The inanimate had come alive. Life from death, the mystery of mysteries, and all such things. The showman stepped forward and graciously let the ladies in the front row smell its exquisite fragrance, so strong, in fact, that even yours truly could smell it from amidst the fellow carnival patrons. And then, back in the center of the stage, the showman snapped his fingers again, and with this the rose ignited, and in a flash of fire it was gone. A gasp rose from the crowd, and a man turned to me with an expression of awe on his face, and his mouth was moving, but no sound passed his lips. And here I must interject that this might not sound like the greatest of conjuring effects, but, dear listener, you must understand that at this stage in the performance, this simple effect somehow struck the deepest and most resonant chord with myself, and I dare say the entire congregation. Perhaps precisely because of its simplicity, we, the audience, could see the miracle and the mystery clearer for this exact simplicity. The applause was different than for all the other preceding feats. It was more quiet, but also more intense and heartfelt, and I thought this would have to be the end, but little did I know. Now we all just witnessed something extraordinary. We saw together, and we touched the mysterious together, and I know you are wondering how it was executed. How can one do such a thing? What is the secret? Where did the rose go? Said the magician, and murmur sort of spread throughout the crowd in the canvas room. You all seem like warm and good people, so I will let you take the final choice. Would you like me to reveal this secret? Show you where the rose returned to? Just let it all be explained, mundane and deflated, or would you instead like to end this performing carrying this feeling of beautiful, unexplained mystery with you? I will let you decide which feeling to leave with. I believe it was one of the guys in the dirty shirts wearing a trucker cap that first said it, but regardless, as soon as one had uttered it, we all shouted for the secret. The showman raised his hands, but said nothing. He looked a little sad, But anyway, he removed his jacket, unbuttoned his shirt, and with his fingernails he grabbed his flesh and tore. And before my eyes, the showman ripped open his chest. Blood poured from the rip. As the wound opened, I saw the ribs beneath, and he pried his fingers between them and broke them apart, an awful sound somewhere between stepping on a dry stick and the cracking of a lettuce. It made my skin crawl. Ribs wrenched open, he forced his right hand in, and after some searching proceeded to pull out his heart. The thick veins and arteries hung low, thick and dripping from the still beating heart, and with each beat, blood flowed in great abundance out of the torn arteries, and the showman, pale and white as a ghost, again with his nails, tore his heart apart and opened it, and from its core he revealed the rose. Gently holding its flowers, he began pulling it out, and its thorns turned the flesh of the vein it protruded from, and the heart inside out, as he tore it free and held it forth, with no strength left in his arms. And for a few moments he inspected us, with a quizzical look upon his ashen face, his chest still open, blood still flowing. No one clapped, and no one spoke. And then the showman fell, like he was dead. And suddenly, the lights turned up to fill fill the entire tent, and as the light seemed to hit the side walls, the tent rolled up like spring-loaded roller curtains, and the crowded midway all looked in on us all, and the spell was broken. And it was in that instance that I understood that we, the audience, had just murdered mystery. There are many roads to be taken, many ways to be taken, many paths to be walked down the midway of life and the midway of the carnival. So today was another one of those. It gives us the opportunity, not quite like a poem, but if we choose to, we can contemplate a story much like we contemplate any poem or any painting for that matter. And if something strikes a resonance with us, then we can explore that a little further. See if anything in this attempt at myth or poetics from yours truly will spark any myth or poetics of your own. It's been a pleasure to walk along with you on this first of perhaps many story-based sojourns down the midway of the illuminated carnivals. Perhaps we will hear more about these illustrious and secret showmen and all their exploits as we proceed. And with all that said, all that is left for me to say is take care of yourself and those you love, and I hope to see you along the way. Yeah.